Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Folks, not unlike what's going on in the Middle East, you're not reading a whole lot about what's happening between Ukraine and Russia. It seems to have moved off of the front pages, and I thought it was time to sit down again with Colonel Jeff McCausland, who we've talked to probably a dozen or so times about what is happening in Ukraine, and he joins us now. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Newell, always a pleasure.
Colonel, I this was headed down a path. It seemed to have some momentum. Things were happening. It's been a start, stop. But the Russians seem to be bombing every city in Ukraine now. What do you see happening, and where are we?
Well, certainly on the battlefield, your description is not inaccurate. The Russians have been intensifying their attacks, particularly on the energy grid across Ukraine. Ukrainians now perhaps receiving 6 hours, maybe even less, of electricity on every given day, using both drones as well as missiles. And some evenings there are 400 or 500 drones and maybe 40 to 50 missiles that are employed. At the same time, though, it's important to point out the Ukrainians have been able to respond. They have now developed their own ballistic missile, a short-range ballistic missile, and they've hit about 50 or so military industrial targets or refineries all across Russia, putting a crimp in Russian fuel supplies, and actually there are some reports of rationing in Moscow. Physically on the battlefield has kind of, if you will, stagnated. I mean, I was looking at some numbers to toss some things at you, Newell, and if you look at the beginning of this year, January 25 to November of 2025, the Russians have gained about 2,000 square miles. Well, that may sound like a great deal, but that's less than 1% of the entire territory of Ukraine, and it's about the size of Rhode Island. And for that 1% of territory, they've had 395,000 casualties in this 1 year alone, which some people suggest are more casualties than they suffered in the war, 10 years of war that they had in Afghanistan. And they may have actually suffered more casualties around one town of Pokrovsk than they suffered in that war, and they still have not taken that particular town. Now, to be fair, all's not right with the Ukrainians. We've had this massive fraud case, which resulted in the chief of staff, Mr. Zelensky, resigning. Millions of dollars involved in that fraud case. Ukrainians as well are having trouble with their own casualties and some increased desertion. So that's kind of the situation on the battlefield for both sides. Last but not least, it's interesting, overnight, also the Ukrainians just employed for the first time a underwater drone, basically a big torpedo with a guidance system, and struck a Kilo-class Russian submarine that was in the Black Sea. Severe damage to that particular vessel. First time the Ukrainians have done something like that.
Yeah, they've been very innovative with not a lot of assets, right? I mean, in many respects. Again, though, would you agree that the kind of the reporting on this has just been waning?
Well, it's been waning, I think, on American media, not so much on European media. And I think for a couple of reasons. One is the Russians, I think, have been very successful. You know, war is fought on several levels, and it's a contest of willpower. So we certainly talk about the battlefield. We talk about airspace. We talk about naval engagements, like that submarine engagement. But there's also battles in the information space. And the Russians have been very successful, I would argue, in controlling the narrative. And they've been pushing the narrative that, hey, we're winning, and our success is inevitable. There's no chance for the Ukrainians to be successful. And that seems to have persuaded a lot of people, frankly, here in the United States, that this is kind of hopeless and we should cut a deal, whatever that deal might be, to end this particular contest. And I think that's really not accurate if you look at some of the things that I just talked about. And that's translated over, obviously, in the last week or so to expand the negotiations led by the United States in many ways. Mr. Witkoff and Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law, going to Moscow to speak with Putin. And then a very important series of negotiations with European leaders and Mr. Zelensky that just concluded in the last couple of days in Berlin, claiming that they have an 80% agreement on a proposal for ending this particular conflict. That being said, in my experience, when you're at 80%, you're just getting to the hard topics. But at the same time, I think it's also problematical, frankly, not to be a pessimist, that Mr. Putin may not agree to any kind of a peace plan simply because he thinks his willpower is stronger and that if he persists.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
They'll be successful.
I was reading an article the other day that French and German citizens, their support for the war, financial support that is kind of waning. Obviously, they're facing tough economic times there, and leadership there is paying close attention to what they're saying, but they seem to be holding firm on being squarely with the Ukrainians and not really willing to give up any territory to Russia. Has that changed any at all?
It hasn't changed, but you put your finger on a crucial problem, and that is European willingness to support the Ukrainians. Because if you look at the numbers in terms of military aid to Ukraine, obviously the American contribution largely disappeared in quarter one, though it was interesting to me in the most recent National Defense Authorization Act, the Congress put about $400 million into Ukrainian mil aid for both 2026 and 2027, but still the vast majority is coming from the Europeans. This particular week will be an important one because not only did we have these Berlin meetings with the Europeans, Zelensky, the United States reps, But on the 18th of December, the European Union will meet. And this particular discussion is one that's been going on for quite some time, and that is whether or not the Europeans can come together to basically leverage about $240 billion in Russian assets that are frozen in European banks and use that as collateral to provide Ukraine about $100 billion in loans. Some of that will be for mill aid. Some of that will be just for economic support. And I think not only is that important from the standpoint of the monetary, you know, amount we're talking about, but as a demonstration of political unity on the part of the Europeans to pick up the slack if, in fact, the United States is basically going to walk away. And again, looking at a document that came out in the last week or so, the president's new national security strategy, that kind of looks like what Mr. Trump is planning on doing. I mean, in many ways, he has talked about that his goal in that particular strategy is to reestablish strategic stability with the Russians. The document kind of dismisses the Russians as any kind of real threat to the United States. With that in mind, you might say, well, from Mr. Trump's perspective, the war in Ukraine is an obstacle between where he is and where he wants to be in terms of the relations with the Russians. We'll need to get that off the table. That's a priority. To a European, you say, you don't understand, compromising Ukrainian security actually compromises our security as well, because we think the Russians will be a larger regional threat for many years to come.
Yeah, no doubt. And it seems as though we are now waiving this Article 5
yes.
protection provision out there as a carrot. I'm not an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but the Ukraine's fell prey to that promise once. Do we really believe they're going to do it again?
That is the crucial question.
Would you?
That's the crucial question. And the last 20% of those negotiations I said we were trying to accomplish with the Ukrainians and eventually with the Russians will be really over two issues, territory and security guarantees. Territory, where do we make concessions? And the Ukrainians have said, okay, we're willing to sign up to have a ceasefire where we are right now, the land that the Russians control physically, they've taken. We'll acknowledge that de facto, but probably not willing to acknowledge that, what they call in diplomatic terms, de jure, that actually is Russian territory, okay?
Right.
But the Russians wanted to do is actually withdraw from about 20% of this Donbass region that the Ukraine still controls. The Ukrainians said, no, we can't do that without a referendum by our people. And furthermore, if we do that, we're going to compromise our defenses because that's our fortress belt, and offer the Russians an opportunity in future then to move in and take the rest of the country if they want. The security guarantees, you're right, are also a problem. The Ukrainians have asked for security guarantees. They had a security guarantee from the United States called the Budapest Memorandum back in the 90s, which proved pretty toothless when the Russians invaded in 2014. So they don't want to go through that again. So they want, if you will, NATO-like security guarantees, while at the same time compromising and acknowledging that NATO membership is not going to happen anytime soon. That's a pretty hard square to circle, you know, if you know what I mean. What might that include? Some have suggested it would be a European-led peacekeeping force on the ground in Ukraine, perhaps a no-fly zone over Ukraine. The United States might contribute to that, at least in terms of reconnaissance and intelligence and verification of compliance with any agreement. But Mr. Trump and the White House has said this particular offer for a security guarantee is temporary. I think, again, they want the Ukrainians to make maximum concessions on, which the Ukrainians aren't willing to make. But once again, right now, for the last couple of weeks, we've basically been negotiating with ourselves.
That was going to be my next question. That's what it seems like to me. I mean, it's almost like we're trying to convince ourselves that this is the path we want to go down.
Right. And even Mario Rubio has said, you know, hey, the most difficult part of this negotiation is going to be with Putin. And ultimately, you would think a war demands direct negotiations between the two antagonists, direct negotiations between Putin and Zelensky, particularly over territory. But Putin has said, what? I'm not going to negotiate with him. He's an illegitimate leader. He needs to have elections, but I would not agree to any kind of ceasefire so an election could occur. Well, how in the heck do you do an election when 400 drones and 100 missiles are hitting your territory every day and 3 to 7 million of your population are dislocated? How do you do an election in that particular environment? In fact, the Russians have even refused in the last day or so to agree to a Christmas ceasefire. And then, second of all, the Russians have been insistent on this territory, insistent that Ukrainian membership in NATO is enshrined in the Ukrainian Constitution, has insisted that all military aid to Ukraine is ended, and Ukrainian military is limited to about 10% of what it is today. And they've been pretty solid in their insistence on those points ever since this war began. Even beyond that, Foreign Minister Lavrov in the last week or so even said, well, what really needs to occur in an agreement is that NATO needs to withdraw those members that entered NATO after 1997. Well, what would that mean? Well, that would mean the Baltic Republic states, Poland, Hungary, Czech Republic, Slovakia, and Sweden, Finland, would all be removed from NATO. I find it pretty difficult to believe the United States would agree to that, nor do I think Ukraine would agree to those other concessions. And last but not least, how many concessions have the Russians made since this war began? I can't think of any that have occurred, frankly, Newell, but we've made a lot.
I mean, as a neophyte, I look at this and I was like, how much forecasting do I need to see to understand what exactly the Russians want and what they're trying to accomplish? I mean, I just, you know,
yeah.
I'm convinced that this is going nowhere with them.
Well, I slightly disagree with you. This is going somewhere. In the fact that the Russians think, well, Putin, let's talk about it really all about, Putin thinks that he will only be successful. He can wear down, not so much the Ukrainians, but wear down the West. The United States will opt out. The Europeans will be unable to meet this decision to provide this additional aid to Ukraine and leverage those frozen Russian assets. And eventually that'll force the Ukrainians to capitulate and I'll get everything I want. He doesn't apparently have a great deal of opposition in Russia. He's pretty well controlling that one. And it's definitely, been damaging to his economy, but he's willing to make those sacrifices if, in fact, he can get exactly what he wants. So until we get to a point where he really believes, you know, I'm not going to gain what I want, and therefore it's time to compromise, I see him trying to string this along because ultimately his goal is, even beyond Ukraine, that's where I disagree with you, Neil. His goal is really to fracture NATO. That's been the goal of every Soviet and Russian leader since NATO was created. And so if this war in Ukraine can only be the fissure that divides Washington from Europe, well, that's a great success. And if you look at the most recent NSS and some of the comments made by Mr. Trump and his administration over the last year about supporting Europe, recent comments in which he called, you know, the Europeans weak and a decaying civilization. That's what he said about our allies. Well, then, if you're a Russian, why would you want to compromise?
Yeah, you know, it. What's it going to take? I mean, in my view, it's collectively all of us, everyone that's in NATO, to decide these are the armaments that we're going to send to Ukraine, and we're going to make a 6 to 9 month commitment that we're going to send all of this over there. Let's make this big push. Let's double down. Let's see what his reaction's going to be. Because all he's been doing is needling the Baltic states and all of those that have coterminous boundaries with Russia, you know, to see whether or not they're, what kind of reactions that they're going to be. And at some point in time, I don't know, it may sound silly, as I said, I'm a neophyte, but let's give them the reaction.
I mean, if you look at it materially, the GDP of the European Union, if you toss in the Canadians, is not terribly smaller than that of the United States. So you would say, oh, they got the economic means to provide this particular type of assistance. The GDP of the Russian Federation, about the size of Italy. So the material assets, you could say, are there. Can you build the political willpower amongst those countries to do that? That remains the critical question. And many, if not all of them, are suffering from slow growth. They're suffering from higher demands for social services. They're suffering from aging populations. So this galvanization of political will, war is a contest of wills, is the question. And that's why I pointed out to this particular event on the 18th of December in terms of divining whether or not they've got that will. But until Mr. Putin becomes convinced that there's that kind of will, that I've, you know, actually hit a wall here, I don't see him, negotiating in good faith. He'll negotiate because, you know, as I used to negotiate with the Russians, and I had a Russian say to me, you know, negotiation is war by another means, because we're controlling the information space. We're trying to show that right. we're actually very forthcoming when we're really not, and that's what they will continue to do. And trying to, which is incredible to me after these many years, basically describe Ukraine not as a victim, but it's really Ukraine's fault that we invaded. Well, that sounds crazy to say, but that basically is the argument. If Ukraine hadn't pursued membership in NATO, we would not have felt the need to invade. So therefore, the fault really lies in Kyiv for this war, not us who crossed the border and started killing Ukrainians.
But Colonel, let me ask you this. How do the Europeans come together when, you know, when they're looking at the U.S., and in my view, Trump has been like mercury, right? Every time you put your finger on it, it's sliding left, right. You know, you don't know where it's going to slide. And that just continues to be this very disruptive force of evading the ultimate question about what can collectively and collaboratively NATO can do. Would I be wrong in that
view? No, I don't think you're wrong there at all. And I do believe you have to give Mr. Trump some credit. Let's face it, ever since I can remember, American presidents have complained that the Europeans were not, you know, sharing their part of the load in terms of defense, of even during the Cold War. And it took Mr. Trump and that sort of effort on his part to be disruptive to shake him into reality along with the invasion of Ukraine. And so now they have said, well, we'll devote up to 5% of our GDP on defense. By the way, that's a higher percentage than the United States spends on our GDP on defense. We're at about 3.5%. Now, whether they can fulfill that obligation, back to those limitations I mentioned a little while ago, that remains to be seen, if they can, in fact, actually do that. And can they convince their populations of that? And that still remains the problem. But you're right again, in that Mr. Trump has been back and forth. We had this explosion with Zelensky in the Oval Office back in February. And then we had sort of a meeting in Rome at the funeral of the Pope, in which things seemed to be coming back together again. So, you know, every day is a new day. You know, Mr. Trump suddenly proposed this 28-point plan out of the blue, which is very favorable to the Russians. This causes the Europeans to react very quickly and say, wait a minute, you don't understand. That compromises our security as well. And so there's a lot of that flip-flop that has caused the Europeans, I think, to be very concerned. Can they depend on the United States in future? Is that American security guarantee for anything worthwhile? And we've seen announcements by all the Europeans, not only about increasing defense spending, but that they have to be more independent. One of the byproducts of that could be that we, frankly, could see a quick growth over the next couple of years of nuclear proliferation and a lot more states acquiring nuclear weapons. Because if you're a German, if you're Swedish, if you're Finnish, you certainly have the industrial capacity to create a nuclear weapon. And if nobody else is going to defend us, then I need something to deter, you know, a threat in the future. Same might be with Taiwan. If you're Taiwan, you're South Korea. 70% of the people in South Korea don't understand why the South Korean government doesn't acquire a nuclear weapon, threatened by the North. So again, if the U.S. is retrenching, which the national security document seems to suggest, beyond the actions we see in Ukraine, why wouldn't those countries pursue self-help to make sure they can deter aggression, whether that aggression is Russian or Chinese?
I say this about a lot of things when I worked in government. If you don't control it, it ain't going to happen. And it seems as though a lot of these countries are coming to that belief system as well. If they don't control it, it's just not going to happen. You know? And they have an obligation to protect their respective citizenry. As always, thoroughly enjoy the conversation. Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst, thank you so much for joining us today, and have a great holiday season.
Same to you, Noel. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, sir. We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and text line. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second, and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.